Welcome to the Deep Dive. So you've sent us some really interesting material, all focused on a question we probably all think about, but maybe don't always dig into. Why do prices change?
Yeah, it's everywhere, isn't it?
Right. So whether you're prepping for a big meeting where, the bottom line really matters, or maybe you're just trying to make sense of the latest economic news, or hey, maybe you're just curious about why things cost what they do. You're in the right place.
Absolutely.
We've got a great overview here based on your sources, covering core economic principles. And our mission today is really to pull out the key insights, the stuff that, really explains why prices go up and down.
Exactly. We'll be looking at supply and demand, of course.
The classic. And also this idea of elasticity, basically how sensitive we are to those price changes.
And then zooming out a bit to the big picture stuff, inflation, deflation.
And how governments sometimes step in to try and, well, keep things stable.
That's right. It's fascinating because we see these price fluctuations constantly, right? Groceries, gas prices. But they're driven by these really fundamental economic forces.
So let's break those down, connecting to what we actually see happening.
Sounds good.
Okay, so let's kick off right at the beginning. Why do prices change at all? The sources are super clear. It all boils down to supply and demand. Classic stuff. Let's tackle demand first. What happens when suddenly everyone wants more of something?
Well, the document lays it out pretty clearly. When demand increases and the supply, the amount available stays the same or doesn't keep up, prices generally go up.
Right.
Think about a new game console release. Huge buzz. Everyone wants it, but they can only make so many at
Oh
first.
yeah, the scramble.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That allows the manufacturers to set a higher price. That intense desire, especially when supply is tight, gives sellers pricing power.
Totally. I remember lining up for things like that. So that surge in wanting something translates directly into those higher initial prices. Okay, what about the opposite? When something loses its appeal, your material had a good example.
Yeah, DVDs, remember those? As streaming services took over, fewer and fewer people wanted physical
A
discs.
relic of the past.
Pretty much. So demand just cratered. Sellers had to slash prices to shift the remaining stock and appeal to the, shrinking base of buyers. It's kind of wild how fast tech changes can flip the script on pricing.
It really is like an economic ecosystem, isn't it? Things thrive or die based on what we want. Now, the source also lists the reasons demand shifts. It's not just random, right? There are drivers.
Absolutely. Changes in income are a big one. If people generally have more money to spend, they tend to buy more stuff, boosting overall demand.
Makes sense. More money, more spending.
Yeah, and it's interesting how, as economies grow, some things that were luxuries can almost become necessities, changing their demand completely. Then you've got consumer trends and preferences, fashion, fads, what's hot. That can change really quickly.
Like fidget spinners.
Huh, exactly. Or substitutes. If coffee gets too expensive, maybe people switch to tea, right? So demand for coffee drops.
Good point.
And finally, just the size of the market matters. More people means more potential customers, generally leading to higher demand for lots of things.
Okay, that paints a really clear picture of the demand side. So let's with it. Let's look at supply. What happens to prices when the amount of something changes?
It's a similar dynamic, but often in reverse. If the supply of something increases and demand stays about the same, prices tend to fall.
Okay.
The document mentions smartphones. As manufacturing got way more efficient and loads more companies jumped in, the sheer number of phones available exploded. That led to more competition and eventually lower prices for us.
Yeah, you definitely see that with tech. Early adopters pay a premium, then prices come down as production ramps up.
That's the pattern. Increased efficiency, more competition usually means lower prices.
Okay, so what about when supply gets squeezed? Like there's less of something available.
That's when prices tend to go up. The classic example is a bad harvest, like a wheat shortage because of drought or floods.
Right.
Less wheat available means bakers, for instance, have to compete for that limited supply, pushing up the cost of their main ingredient. And guess who ends up paying more for bread?
We do.
Exactly. Those costs get passed on. It really shows how vulnerable things are to supply chain disruptions, whether it's weather or, other issues.
And just like with demand, there are specific reasons supply shifts, right? It's not random either.
Precisely. Production costs are huge. If raw materials, labor, or energy get more expensive, it costs businesses more to make things.
So they might make less or charge more.
Or both. That can reduce the supply available at a given price, pushing prices up. Technology is the flip side. Advancements often make production cheaper and more efficient,
leading to more supply, potentially lower prices.
Correct. We already mentioned natural disasters disrupting supply. And then there are government policies, think regulations, taxes, subsidies. They can all impact how much it costs to produce something and therefore how much gets supplied.
Okay, so supply and demand, the fundamentals. Got it. But the sources also talk about elasticity. Sounds kind of stretchy. What's that about in economics?
Stretchy is a good way to think about it. Elasticity basically measures how much the quantity demanded or supplied changes when the price changes. It's about sensitivity. How much do we react?
Okay, sensitivity. So let's start with elastic demand. What's that mean?
Elastic demand means a small change in price causes a big change in how much people want to buy. Think luxury goods, like a fancy watch. If the price goes up even a little bit, a lot of potential buyers might say, nah, not worth it, and buy something else or nothing at all. Sales drop significantly. The demand is very sensitive or elastic to the price.
Right, because it's not essential, and there are probably alternatives. So what's the opposite? Inelastic demand.
Inelastic demand is when price changes have very little effect on how much people buy. Essential medicines are the go-to example here.
No.
If the price of a life-saving drug goes up, people who need it will likely still buy it, right? Their demand isn't very sensitive or inelastic to the price. This difference is super important for businesses setting prices and for us figuring out our budgets.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah. Necessities versus nice-to-haves. Okay, so demand can be elastic or inelastic. Can supply be too?
Absolutely. Elastic supply means producers can ramp up or cut back production pretty quickly and easily if the price changes. Maybe soft drinks or, like the document mentioned, digital downloads. If an ebook price goes up and demand is there, the seller can make more copies available almost instantly at very little extra cost. Supply responds readily.
Okay, easy to scale up digital stuff. But what about things where it's not easy to change production quickly? That'd be inelastic supply.
Exactly. Inelastic supply is when it's hard or takes a long time for producers to change their output much, even if the price changes dramatically. Farming is a great example.
Right. You can't just grow more corn overnight.
Precisely. If corn prices double today, farmers can't instantly produce twice as much. It takes a whole growing season. So in the short term, the supply is pretty fixed or inelastic. Time is often the key factor.
Okay. Fascinating. So we've done the micro level individual goods. Let's zoom out now. Let's talk big picture. Inflation and deflation. These are economy-wide price changes over time. Let's start with inflation rising prices. What is it and why should we care?
Well, inflation is basically a sustained increase in the general level of prices across the whole economy. Not just one thing getting expensive, but lots of things. And we should care because it eats away at the value of our money.
Reduces purchasing power.
Exactly. The same dollar buys you less than it used to. It means a higher cost of living. And as the source notes, it can sometimes lead to these nasty wage price spirals.
Explain that spiral.
Okay, so prices go up. Workers then demand higher wages to keep up with the rising cost of living. Businesses, facing higher labor costs, then have to raise their prices again to cover those costs, which then leads workers to demand even higher wages. And round and round it goes. It fuels more inflation.
Yikes. Sounds like a tough cycle to escape. The source mentions different causes of inflation. Let's break those down. First, demand pull inflation. What's doing the pulling?
Demand pull is when there's just too much demand in the economy overall, more than the available supply can handle. Consumers, businesses, the government, everyone's trying to buy more stuff than is being produced.
Too much money chasing too few goods.
Essentially, yes. That excess demand pulls prices up as buyers compete for what's available. Like trying to buy tickets for a super popular concert, the price gets bid up.
Okay, got it. What about cost push inflation? Sounds like it's coming from the production side.
That's right. Cost push happens when businesses' production costs go up. Maybe raw materials get pricier, or wages rise, or energy costs spike.
Like oil prices.
Exactly. That's a classic example. Businesses, wanting to protect their profit margins, pass those higher costs on to consumers by raising their prices. They're pushing the costs onto us. An oil shock can cause widespread inflation because oil is used in, like, everything.
Right. Transportation, manufacturing.
Yeah.
Okay. And the third type mentioned, monetary inflation. Sounds like it's about the money supply itself.
It is. Monetary inflation is often linked to a rapid increase in the amount of money circulating in an economy without a matching increase in the actual goods and services being produced.
So more money, same amount of stuff.
Yeah. When you have too much money chasing the same amount of goods, each individual dollar becomes less valuable. It takes more dollars to buy the same thing, so prices rise. Think of it like just printing tons more money. If the economy isn't growing as fast, that money loses value.
Okay, so inflation, rising prices, generally not great if it gets out of hand. Now, the opposite, deflation, falling prices. Sounds good, right? Cheaper stuff. But the sources say, maybe not.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive, but deflation can actually be pretty damaging. The big problem the document highlights is expectations. If people expect prices to keep falling, what do?
They wait to buy things, hoping it gets even cheaper later.
Exactly. Especially big purchases, cars, appliances. So consumer spending dries up. That leads to lower demand, forcing businesses to cut prices even more. Profits shrink.
So then?
Then businesses might cut costs, maybe freeze wages, lay people off. That reduces income, which reduces spending further. It can become this really dangerous downward spiral for the whole economy.
Wow. Okay, so that initial appeal of cheaper stuff is misleading. What usually causes deflation?
Well, that drop in consumer spending is a major cause, as we just said. But also, sometimes there's just way too much supply businesses produced more than people want to buy, so they slash prices to clear inventory.
And maybe technology, if things get way cheaper to make.
Yeah, significant widespread productivity gains from technology could potentially contribute to deflationary pressure over the long run, though that's often seen as a good kind of deflation, unlike the demand-driven kind.
The source mentions the Great Depression as a really stark example of bad deflation.
Oh, absolutely. It was devastating. Prices plummeted, but people hoarded cash because they expected prices to fall even more. Demand collapsed, businesses failed, unemployment skyrocketed. It's the extreme example of why persistent falling prices can be just as bad, if not worse, than high inflation.
Okay, so ideally, we want stable prices,
mm-hmm.
not runaway inflation, not damaging deflation.
Yeah.
This is where governments and central banks step in, right? Our material talks about their interventions. Let's start with monetary policy. That's the central bank's job, mainly using interest rates.
Correct. Central banks, like the Fed in the U.S., use tools, primarily adjusting interest rates, to influence borrowing costs and how much credit is available. To fight inflation when prices are rising too fast, they typically raise interest rates.
Making borrowing more expensive.
Exactly. That discourages businesses from borrowing to invest and consumers from borrowing to spend, especially on big things like houses or cars. It cools down overall demand, which helps slow price increases.
Okay, and the reverse. To fight deflation or just a sluggish economy?
They lower interest rates, makes borrowing cheaper. The idea is to encourage businesses to invest and consumers to spend, boost demand, get the economy moving, and put some upward pressure on prices to avoid that deflationary spiral.
All right, so that's monetary policy. And then there's fiscal policy. This is more the government itself using spending and taxes.
Yes. Fiscal policy is about the government adjusting its own spending levels and tax rates to influence overall demand. For instance, during a recession or deflationary period, the government might cut taxes,
leaving people with more money to spend.
Right. Or they might increase government spending maybe on big infrastructure projects or social programs. That directly injects money and demand into the economy.
So lower taxes, higher spending to stimulate. What about using fiscal policy to fight inflation?
To cool down an overheating economy, they might do the opposite. They could raise taxes, taking money out of consumers' pockets to dampen spending. Or they could cut government spending, which directly reduces overall demand. Both aim to ease the upward pressure on prices.
Okay, monetary, fiscal. And the source also mentions trade policies, things like tariffs and bans. How do they fit into price management?
Yeah, they can definitely impact prices. Import tariffs taxes on goods coming into the country make those imported goods more expensive.
Which helps domestic producers compete.
It can, but it also usually means consumers pay higher prices for those goods, whether imported or domestic alternatives. On the other hand, a government might impose an export ban on essential items, say food, during a crisis.
Why would they do that?
To keep enough supply within the country and prevent domestic prices from spiking due to shortages. But of course, that reduces supply elsewhere, potentially raising prices in other countries. So trade policies have these ripple effects.
Man, it really is a complex web, isn't it? Individual choices, company decisions, global events, government actions. All feeding into the prices we pay.
It really is. And what's fascinating is how they all interact. A change in one area, like an interest rate hike, can ripple through everything else. It's a constant balancing act for policymakers and definitely keeps things interesting for those of us trying to understand it all.
Okay, so let's try and boil this down. Some key takeaways for you, our listener, from this deep dive based on your materials. First, it all starts with supply and demand, right? Those are the fundamental forces setting prices.
Absolutely. And crucial to remember, prices aren't static. They're always adjusting to shifts in supply or demand or both, driven by everything from consumer taste to global events.
And we talked about elasticity, that sensitivity measure. How much does demand or supply react when prices change? Understanding if something is elastic or inelastic is huge for businesses pricing things and for us making buying decisions.
Definitely. Then, zooming out, we hit inflation rising prices, eroding purchasing power, and deflation falling prices that can stifle spending and lead to economic slowdowns. Both have major impacts.
Right. And finally, governments and central banks aren't just sitting back. They use monetary policy, like interest rates, and fiscal policy, like taxes and spending, plus trade rules, to try and steer things towards stable prices and a healthy economy.
Yeah, understanding these principles gives you a much better lens for viewing, you know, economic news and the forces shaping our daily financial lives.
Well, that brings us pretty much to the end of this deep dive. Thanks so much for sharing your sources with us. It's always really useful to get back to these core economic ideas and see how they play out.
Agreed. It's a good reminder that those price tags we see aren't just random numbers. There's a whole lot going on behind them.
Definitely. And just to leave you with something to chew on, considering how interconnected everything is globally now, what do you think might be the biggest, maybe most unpredictable factor influencing prices in the next few years? And, you know, how might understanding the stuff we talked about today help you navigate whatever that turns out to be? Something to think about.